Couple of housekeeping things before we start. I'll introduce our panel. To the left is Justice Doug Norvath. To my right is Justice Gavin Basil, and I'm Justice Herbert. The most important thing is we've got a big old fan blowing right behind our heads, which interferes with our ability to hear sometimes. So I would just ask the council to please make sure you speak up.
It makes it pretty cool, though.
It's freezing. So if we start shivering, it's not a response to something that needs to happen. So I understand the council has checked in with the clerk, and if there's nothing else we need to take care of, we'll go ahead and proceed. I'll ask the court to call the case.
Right. The court will now call CSHK Dubai Contracting LLC versus Sadruddin Inayat Ali et al. May it please the court, Mrs. Christina Alexeyeva will argue for the appellant, and Mr. Byron K. Henry will argue for the appellee.
Good afternoon, and may it please the court. My name is Christina Alexeyeva, and I represent the appellant's CSHK. This case involves a civil lawsuit between Dubai company CSHK and three individuals who resided in Dubai, operated a company in Dubai, and committed fraud in Dubai. The only place CSHK could have brought this lawsuit was in Dubai, but CSHK could not collect from the judgment, because defendants took their assets out of the country and moved to the United States. This is exactly the type of problem the Texas Judgments Recognition Act is designed to solve. This is not a case of forum shopping, and there is no evidence that CSHK acted fraudulently in the Dubai courts. The usual rule in these cases, and this is a statutory presumption, is that the judgment is enforceable unless defendants can provide admissible evidence establishing some sort of procedural deficiency in the civil legal system, in the legal system as a whole, or in the particular proceedings. The only evidence defendants have for their systemic claims are several paragraphs in their expert declaration establishing that Dubai is a civil law country and it incorporates principles of Sharia. As for specific claims, the only evidence defendants rely on are a handful of identical conclusory statements in their declaration to the effect that they were, quote, never permitted to litigate the merits of the claim. Besides that, the only things they have are the 2021 judgment itself, a court of appeals judgment from the 2020 case, and a Dubai court-appointed expert report. That is it.
Their evidence is a little more thorough than that. I mean, if you look at page 2930 of the record, I'm just going to get his name wrong, but Mr. Dorigia's declaration, he says they weren't able to contest this expert report. Their experts declaration on page 12, 2943 of the record says the same thing. So do you contend that Dr. Al-Ramar's report didn't drive the fact-finding process in the case in Dubai?
Not at all, Your Honor. A couple of points here. So the way the Dubai system is set up, and this is true of all civil legal systems, this is France, this is Switzerland, all of Latin America, is that the fact-finding process is driven by the expert. However, that does not mean that defendants could not have participated in those proceedings, and I'll give you three reasons. The first one is that this is, of course, the argument that they made on appeal in the 2020 case, but the remedy that they requested was, quote, to remand the case to the court of first instance to rule again, or alternatively, to appoint a committee of experts. This is at 5 CR 5145.
Don't they attack the expert's report three times on that very page? They say the expert's report is invalid three times on that page.
So going to the expert report itself, defendants still had ample opportunities to contest that in the court of first instance. The first thing that it is true that they say they weren't permitted to submit the expert report, but Your Honor, they don't explain why.
Well, I think their argument is a little different than that. The argument is they weren't able to have any input because they didn't know the expert was preparing the report.
Yes, Your Honor. So that's their first argument, and that goes back to my point that that's the argument they made to the Court of Appeals in Dubai in 2020. But the remedy that they requested wasn't to go back to the expert proceedings. The remedy they requested was to go back to the court of first instance, and they have never explained why they made that choice.
Well, that's not what all they asked for. They asked for in the Court of Appeals for that court to rule that the report was invalid. So they didn't take inconsistent positions from the Court of Appeals.
I wouldn't describe that as inconsistent positions, no, Your Honor, and that is not our point. Our point is that they said that the sufficient remedy would be to remand to the court of first instance to rule again. That was their position.
Were they not permitted to make the argument about the invalidity of the expert's report when the case was remanded?
Oh, absolutely, Your Honor. That is exactly our argument. They were permitted to say all of those things again on remand to the court of first instance, but they didn't do that. Defendants say they weren't allowed to present defenses to the expert report, but they don't cite a single document. They don't cite a witness statement. They don't cite a single argument that they sought to make in the court of first instance, but the court of first instance refused. The only thing they have is their competing expert report. But to that point, they don't even explain why the court of first instance rejected it. I mean, courts reject filings all the time for mundane reasons, like maybe it was untimely, perhaps the expert wasn't qualified. But that is the problem with the evidence in the record. We just don't know what happened. And so the only thing we have then is their speculation that the Dubai Court of First Instance rejected this for some improper reason. But we don't know that, and that is not suffice to defeat the presumption of enforceability. So what would be sufficient is if defendants submitted their actual expert report, their motion to put it in, the court of first instance ruling explaining why the report wasn't put in. Or at the very least, they should have specified in their declarations what the circumstances of those proceedings were. They could have also submitted declarations from their counsel in Dubai proceedings. We just don't know what happened. All we have is their assertion that the Dubai court didn't permit the report. It's not even the assertion.
I'm not talking about their report. I'm talking about the report that was initially prepared. If there really any controversy on the record, that report drove the fact findings of this case, and that they did not have the ability to influence the fact findings made in that report because they didn't know it was being prepared.
There is no controversy over that. But that's, again, just a feature of every civil legal system. It is different.
That a report is prepared by someone who doesn't know it's being prepared because they were never served? That's a feature of a civil system?
No, Your Honor, and I apologize. The feature is that the process starts with the expert report, right? So then the way to remedy some procedural deficiency, like what happened in the case here, would have been to ask the court to restart the expert proceedings. It would have been, or remand that to that expert, or ask the court to submit questions to that expert. All of that was permitted. Defendants simply didn't do that, and they've never explained their choice.
But where do we know on the record that all of that was permitted?
The 3 CR 2941, paragraph 42, that's the expert report, that's the expert declaration, and that says that defendants are allowed to submit any pleadings, any evidence, any kind of argument they wish to the court of first instance. And a helpful case here would be Alliance Swiss. So in that case, defendant made the exact same argument that the Swiss legal system did not allow him to submit a competing expert report, fully participate in the expert proceedings, or adequately confront the expert through cross-examination. But the court said, no, there was no due process violation, And that's because the defendant was still, quote, permitted to present evidence and make arguments to the court. This is at 24F3rd at 679. So that's the same thing here, right? Consider the arguments that defendants are raising now in this court. They say things like, the expert impermissibly relied on pre-2013 content. That is a legal argument, Your Honor. They could have made that to the court of first instance in Dubai. That's not something they needed an expert report to prove. Consider another of their arguments. They say the expert incorrectly concluded that Trident had insufficient assets. All defendants had to do to remedy that is submit bank statements showing that Trident had sufficient assets. So in addition to the fact that they don't provide any evidence explaining what actually went on, explaining why they didn't request a remand back, they also haven't actually established that there was any need for a competing expert report or that they couldn't actually challenge the meat of the expert proceedings that went on. So on top of all of that, there's one more problem, and that is that in the 2021 proceedings, they did not appeal any procedural irregularities, right? So they had a second go around, and at minimum, what they should have done is say, the remedy that we asked for initially turned out to be insufficient because the court of first instance, you know, wouldn't let us ask questions of the record or wouldn't remand back to the expert or wouldn't let us submit some sort of crucial piece of evidence. But they didn't do that. They concede, though, and this is a 2CR 2070 paragraph 11, declaration of defendant Ali. They concede that they were, quote, allowed to challenge the procedural deficiencies of the expert proceedings on appeal. That is their words. But they didn't do that. Their appeal in the 2021 case focused on the fact that CSHK's case was time barred. This is a 3CR 2955 paragraph 93. So that's what they challenged. If there was a huge procedural deficiency, and they admit that they could have challenged that in the 2021 case, why didn't they? This court has said back in 1997 in the Dart case that it will not consider arguments that could have been brought if the foreign proceedings but weren't. So in that case, the defendant challenged the fact that he didn't get a civil jury trial. And what this court told that defendant was, you had an opportunity to request a jury trial in the foreign court. You simply did not avail yourself of that opportunity. The same exact situation here. Again, defendants could have asked right away in the 2020 proceedings to remand back to the expert. Once back in the 2021 proceedings, they could have submitted any evidence that they wished to counter expert's findings. They could have asked again to remand to the expert. And they could have appealed it one more time. They didn't do any one of those things. So that simply is waiver. That is not a denial of due process. For example, consider a Texas trial where a party relies on hearsay evidence impermissibly, but the other party doesn't object. And the other party doesn't bring that point up on appeal. We would not say that that party was denied due process. We would say that party waived the right to raise an argument. This is what's going on here. I'd like to take a moment to address the systemic claim. So their evidence about Dubai's system boils down to the fact that it is a civil law country and that it incorporates principles of Sharia law. Now, those procedures are very different, as we've been discussing. But there is no case that has declined to grant to recognize a foreign judgment just because a country has a civil legal system or incorporates Sharia. The Fifth Circuit in De Jure considered Moroccan procedures fair. In the CDM case, the court enforced the Saudi Arabia award. Same exact procedures. Defendants do make more serious accusations. They say things like, litigants in Dubai, quote, cannot challenge findings of fact on appeal, introduce controverting evidence at trial, present oral or written witness testimony. That's in the brief 5154. Those would cause concerns, Your Honor. However, if the court goes to those pages of the response brief, It will see the defendant cite no sources for those allegations. So the only thing they have is that this is a civil legal system. At the end of the day, Dubai is a major hub for economic, for commerce, for especially in the energy sector. So if the court were to deny this award on systemic grounds, that would cause profound implications for foreign relations, because that would essentially place Dubai's system on par with countries like Liberia during the Civil War.
Well, we don't have to raise that argument because it's permissive.
That's correct, Your Honor. One more thing I'll say about the permissive grounds, and this is similar to what we've been discussing, is that many times in their brief, they say that they were not permitted to litigate the merits. So all of that comes from just a couple lines in their declarations. And those declarations, again, say things like, quote, never permitted to litigate the merits. That's a 2 CR 2070, paragraph 11. They don't explain what it is they weren't allowed to do. So that just goes back to the idea that they should have presented some sort of evidence, motions, court rulings, or at the very, very least, declarations from themselves or declarations from their counsel explaining.
Do Dubai courts have something similar to what we have here, where you have a clerk's record, a reporter's record, where they could have given evidence that they had moved to admit certain evidence and were denied?
Well, first of all, that's in the record, Your Honor, and that's certainly a point that they could have made if that was the reason that they couldn't present it. But even if that's true, they could still have put in detailed declarations, right? They could have put declarations from their Dubai counsel. If the court looks at the second DeGioia case, for example, and that's at 804 F3rd 393, it will find examples of the kinds of detailed declarations that we're talking about here that are sufficient. So that leaves just two of defendants' arguments that they have failed to preserve in the trial court. There's the double recovery argument and the point that CSHK has not submitted a copy of the final judgment. We're happy to rest in the pleadings with regards to the double recovery. The math is in there. Even in respondent's brief on page 19, they point out that there was a setup. As for the fact that CSHK did not present the final and enforceable judgment, of course we submitted a copy. The only quibble here is that we've submitted it after the summary judgment hearing, but a Texas court is permitted to admit that evidence under Texas Rule of Civil Procedure 166AC. The only question this court asks is whether there is any indication on the face of the order that the court considered that evidence. Of course there is, because if the translation was not in the record, the court would have just denied on threshold.
Why didn't you file a motion for a leave to file that, since you did
it
after the hearing?
Your Honor, I'm about to run out of time. Can I answer the question?
Sure.
So that came up during the evidentiary hearing. Our position is that during the evidentiary hearing, the trial court did grant us the permission to file that, and that is on Appendix 126-128. But the backup position and the stronger one is that there is evidence from the
case. May it please the court, Justices Kerr, Hassel, Womack. I'd like to first address the systemic and backup. On the systemic, it is not simply an argument that this is a civil. There's a lot of cases cited that not having a jury, for example, doesn't render no due process. Not having lawyers cross-examine witnesses, that doesn't do it. Not having the right to call oral witnesses and have oral testimony, that doesn't do it. What we have in this case is almost all of them. So it's not that this is a civil jurisdiction. It's not just that it's Sharia law. It's not that you don't get a jury trial. It's not that you can't do certain things. Our expert's declaration, what wasn't struck by the trial court on sustained objections, demonstrates all the items that are different than what you would consider typical due process.
Well, are there any cases Is counsel right that there are no cases where there's been non-recognition on the systemic ground coming from a Sharia law country?
There has been some non-recognition, but not on that basis. There has not, there's not a case that strikes an entire court system because, simply because they follow Sharia law. That is accurate. But one other thing you could think about the systemic, and this is in our expert declaration, their expert opines as to all the niceties and things you can do under device system, but he cites the Judicial Reform Act of 2022 that went into effect January 1, 2023. All of those are part of a Judicial Reform Act that added all those features in 2022 to be effective 2023, including an entire new ethics issue with respect to attorneys and experts. So that's new. So any opining by this court on the way the system existed in 20 and 21 would not, one, be impugning the current judicial system of Dubai, that's not before the court, and two, would not upset international relations or put money at jeopardy or investments or necessarily create some foreign policy issue. But I'm with Justice Vassil on the issue of systemic being kind of a grander, difficult burden. I've read the cases too. I think we check a lot of the boxes. Whether or not we check enough or all of them, I don't think this court needs to get into those weeds, because I think on the specific proceedings, we check plenty of boxes. And this stems, I think, from a dispute where they briefed the entire case as a question of law, meaning they say there's no dispute on the facts, this is just a legal question. And I would point the court as a roadmap to fact-finding in a recognition case, the DeGioia 2 case from the Fifth Circuit. They cite the DeGioia 1 case for a lot. There's two issues there. The DeGioia 1 case is under mandatory factors only, and there was a change in the law, so that's two strikes. And three, that court went through in detail the interplay between abuse of discretion and findings of fact, which this court's aware of under Texas law. When you have abuse of discretion, there's a conflation of insufficiency of the evidence with abuse of discretion. But interestingly, just like federal procedure where you have to show that there's no evidence or it's implausible, in Texas you have three choices. There's no evidence to support a finding, there is conclusive evidence on the other side, or no reasonable fact finder could have made the finding based on the evidence. So it's basically kind of a Keller three prongs insufficiency. So under my friend on the other side's theory, there was no fact-finding in this case. In other words, Judge Johnson did no fact-finding. This is just a general challenge to a court system, a civil court system, and it's over. But unfortunately, if you read not only his questions, but our challenges, in other words, the bases, they were fact-based on the proceeding. They were legal-based on the system. And
let me ask you just a question. There were a huge number of objections sustained by the trial court in this case. How do we know what parts of the court's records have survived for us to consider? Because no one challenged the ruling on those objections.
Well, there's only a couple of items in each party's brief, I will concede, where someone slipped up and actually cited provisions that had been struck. But I can tell you one of those is this provision that my friend on the other side cited to the court about the ability to appeal expert findings. That's paragraph 47 of our expert's second declaration, or first, pardon me, Your Honors. And that was struck from the record. So the one item she relies on, which I don't think is dispositive anyway, isn't part of the record on appeal, and no one's challenged it. So if that's their only basis for that, then they lose. But I want to point something else out here, is that in foreign recognition cases, findings of fact and conclusions of law are appropriate. I mean, this court, Texas courts have reviewed them and granted them. Anytime a Texas court judge makes findings of fact or needs to make findings of fact, the case law says that you can request them. And there's a case, this isn't in our brief, so I apologize, but there's a case called Lancaster v. West Corp Solutions. It's a recognition case out of Corpus Christi. It's at 673 Southwest 3rd, 57. There's another one out of Houston, 2016, called Nicholas v. Environmental Systems, 499 Southwest 3rd, 888. And I bring those up because no request was made as to why the court actually made the conclusions in the order of law that the process in this proceeding wasn't compatible with due process, which means everything we alleged that has evidence in support of it, unless they challenge the evidence, and I'll just note for the court, they make no insufficiency challenges whatsoever in their brief. They make a general averment that there's no evidence to support the fact that this court doesn't provide, those courts in Dubai don't provide due process, but they don't challenge any implied finding that the trial court would have had to have made. For example, we claim the judgment represents a violation of public policy. We did not, in fact, abandon that argument. Our brief at page 73 in response brief argues it. We argued it at length at the trial court. It's in our papers, and on 73, we briefed it. It's one of our bullet points in our table of contents, so I don't know how it's not preserved. But in any event, regardless of whether you think that has merit, the court would have had to find to grant relief on that some finding with respect to that. That doesn't mean it's not reviewable. It just means nobody's challenged it. We have not had the chance to join that issue where the other side would say, to the extent the trial court found that this is a double recovery which violates the public policy, this court would say, there's no challenge to that, so we'll accept that. Then you would still have the discretion to determine under the case law whether that rises to the public policy that meets the case law. Is that enough, for example? Because I think there's one case out there that says public policy means public health, safety, and welfare. So this court might say, to be candid, yeah, that's against Texas public policy, but the public policy they're talking about in the act talks about other kinds of policy. I'm not saying that's the right answer. I'm just saying that's a conclusion of law this court would have to review. But all of the facts that are in the declarations, the court has to believe somebody. You can't just hear arguments at an oral hearing that lasts an hour and say, yeah, I think this doesn't comport with due process. Your honors would reverse that in a heartbeat because there's nothing for him to base his ruling on. So if there's facts, and I just want to take issue a tad bit with counsel's statement that really all we said was we weren't allowed to litigate the claims. That is one statement, and that is, it's a factual statement, but it does not have the background or the basis for how we weren't. So you can make an objection argument on that. It's still part of the record, by the way, and they didn't move to strike it, so it survived to here. But we said things like, never given an opportunity to contest the expert findings, all three defendants. That's on 2 CR 2068, 3 CR 2930, 5 CR 5172. Appellees were never permitted to submit a controverting expert report.
So it's your position that just those statements are enough, that your clients didn't have to go further and present like a detailed declaration from a Dubai lawyer that really gets very granular about why their clients were denied?
There's no support for that, because the way you look at non-recognition and due process is determine what happened, not why it happened. There is an exception that I'll address in just a minute about waiver that this court has dealt with in the Dark case. But other than that, you look at what happened. And the odd thing is that it's sort of like a tails they win, heads we lose. If we have the opportunity and don't make the argument, we can't challenge. If we make the challenge and lose it, we can't challenge. And I will tell you that every case cited by both parties in the brief involved the defendant appearing at some point in the foreign country and engaging. None of these are a person sitting at home and the next thing they know they're served with a foreign judgment.
Well, but y'all were involved, in, not you, but lawyers for the defendants were involved in 2020-2021, correct?
That's right. I'm saying that every case involves parties making an appearance at some point and trying to undo the judgment before coming home, before the judgment comes here, and then they try to get non-recognition. If the argument that if you're in those courts and you make an argument and lose, you can never get a judgment not recognized, you would have none of the cases we've cited for non-recognition. Most of the cases involve someone that appeared, made some arguments, but in a couple cases, they were just outright rejected, and courts said they were rejected, but they didn't bar them from the non-recognition. They actually didn't recognize the judgment. In the one case that applies to the actual court we're dealing with here, and that is Dubai courts, the case actually said, the Webb case,
Even a cursory reading of the various decisions of the Dubai courts reveal that the initial default judgment carried great weight and influenced later decisions of the Dubai courts. And as a result, even though they were there after the initial default, doing all their arguments the whole way through after the initial default, because it carried great weight here, and I'll read you this in just a minute, it was dispositive. It was conclusive. It did not carry great weight. It was the only thing the court ruled on. How do you know that? It says so in the judgment. The court expressly says, I am so convinced that the expert report is correct that I am adopting it in full. Now, their argument in the reply brief is, well, see, their expert report wouldn't have mattered because all of their evidence was so good that they would have lost anyway. The response to that on due process is this. It doesn't matter how good your case is if you don't get to show up. There's no case that says, even Craddock, for goodness sake, you have to present a meritorious defense if you have notice and accidentally don't appear. But if there's no notice, you don't even have to present a meritorious defense to a claim under Craddock because you didn't get notice and you didn't have an opportunity to defend it. So the idea that because an ex parte, one-sided, only one party gets to argue with an interest in the case to get an expert to issue a report is so good that we shouldn't be able to complain about it later is...
Well, what about the appellant's argument that in the appellate process, your clients could have asked to go back and restart the expert process, seek other remedies that were apparently not sought.
First,
do you disagree with that?
Yes, on two bases. One, the record doesn't support that. The record does not support that we had those opportunities and failed to, and you're dealing with a judgment in our favor, which means all findings, with no findings of fact, are implied in our favor. There is no evidence in the record that the court could write an opinion and cite anything that's the case. No competent evidence before this court. The second thing is, none of the opinions that are cited parse the docket sheet and every argument that was made and everything that was filed. The foreign procedure goes up through, ends, they come back here, a party complains, this happened to me over there. And if you read the opinions, especially the Joria, especially Webb, there is no page after page about, in this appeal, they argued 3 points. Technically, they didn't argue that point. There's none of that. The one case they rely on, the Dark case from this court, first of all, it's pre-act. So it was dealing with another subset of issues and rules. But that was where the party specifically had two bases, no jurisdiction, well, they appeared and consented, and then argued that they didn't get a jury trial, and there is a rule specifically allowing for a jury trial that they never even tried to get. We have evidence in the record that supports us, and the judgment itself supports the fact that we had our own expert that we tried to get in, and were blocked. So it's not that initial CASD expert proceeding was prejudicial, or that it was carried great weight. Those findings were cut and pasted into the first judgment. That judgment was reversed for lack of notice. It came back down to the CFI, and weeks later, mind you, the exact same judgment word for word was entered based on the expert report. So that's like going to a default prove up. I'm not there. They prove up their damages. I appeal, say, hey, I didn't have notice. Okay, goes up the Court of Appeals, reversed, and the trial court just takes everything that happened at the default proceeding that I wasn't there, and says, well, there was enough evidence there, I don't need to listen to you at this remand. So that's what happened. And there's no evidence in the record to say that's not what happened. And that's correct. And there's two things here. The notice issue is a little bit confusing because we don't doubt that notice or no, we appeared in the second proceeding that resulted in the judgment. So we were there for that because we got the first one reversed. The question is, did that matter? Because the second thing about due process is it's not just an opportunity to make arguments. They made the statement in their brief that you had the ability to make arguments or present to the court. What they leave out, and it was very carefully worded, is all those opportunities to be heard include that you get to defend yourself on the merits. Meaning we never had an opportunity to engage the CASD process, which is the conclusive issue in civil cases in Dubai. So regardless of whether that comports systemically with a, and I agree that just having a CASB process doesn't render the whole thing void. And she said, well, that's the way they all do it, of course. And both parties are involved. Both parties get to submit information and evidence. Both parties have counsel pressing the expert and trying to get the report to favor them. So it isn't an inquisitorial, because that's when the expert takes the info in and then spits out the findings that the trial court almost universally, according to the evidence, relies on. So the bottom line here is the lack of due process isn't that they have a CASB. It's not that we didn't know what was going on. It's that there's nothing we could do about the merits.
But could we say you didn't prove there was nothing you could do about that? That is the basis of a waiver.
Well, first of all, there's only one mention of waiver or estoppel in the trial court, one in their brief. And that had to do with an issue that's not even an issue on appeal. It's at 5 CR 5217, paragraph 32. That's the only issue that survived court's objections as competent evidence. They didn't argue in the trial court this remedy issue. In fact, the prayer in the Court of Appeals with respect to remand is new in this court. So that was never something Judge Johnson got to consider. He considered waiver, but it was under a in a completely different area once you strike out all the evidence that was the objections were sustained. So Judge Johnson gets to determine first whether or not we waive something by not making an argument. And in this case, we don't dispute, we engage the proceedings. But there's just nothing, no way to fix it. And that is the due process violation. And if you read DeGioia 2 and you read the Webb case, which are two cases that are directly on point, not odd cases that you gotta extrapolate. I mean, DeGioia is a roadmap of how to review a trial court's finding. And Webb tells you about due process, and Webb tells you in there that the Dubai courts are notorious for allowing those expert reports to have great weight afforded to them. So even if you just assume that court's view, it proves the prejudicial problem that we were prejudiced by the fact that the court relied on that expert report. And once again, I haven't been able to argue in our brief about, I mean, we stated the facts, but they haven't challenged any of our facts. And to argue that testimony from a witness from the stand unobjected to or allowed by the court that's not challenged on appeal, that I attempted to call a witness and the court rejected it, or I attempted to file a document and the court rejected it, it's not evidence, it's new to me. I mean, that is certainly sworn evidence before a court that if he was sitting on the stand in front of Judge Johnson would have been able to give, subject to objection and challenge in this court, of course, which hasn't happened. So you have a factual record which supports the fact that we were hung with a default expert which resolved the facts against us. And you're not allowed to relitigate the facts, but multiple courts look at the actual underlying merits to satisfy themselves that it was unfair. Meaning had the report come out neutrally or in our favor, the court may think differently. So what the courts do is they don't relitigate what the expert found, but Judge Johnson went through and said, there's no finding of fraud in here. There's no... Some of this stuff so far predates the dispute, it couldn't have been to avoid the judgment. So he's not saying the expert's wrong, he's not gonna find the expert made a mistake, but what he's doing is satisfying himself that that expert procedure was so tainted that it caused us basically to suffer a judgment to the tune of $51 million here, and something that we believe the record supports should be affirmed, the non-recognition, based on the record before the court. And if the court doesn't have any other questions.
Thank you.
I'd like to start with a reminder that the burden here is on the defendants to rebut the presumption. This is not a case of blurring evidence on two sides. The burden is entirely on them to show that something went wrong. If they never presented an argument to the foreign court, they cannot make out a procedural violation, because the only way you get to a procedural violation is if the other court had the opportunity to consider this question, but rejected it on improper grounds. So that's the problem with the record. If they can't show that they've made an argument and they can't show that the court rejected it on improper grounds, that is not a due process violation. And defendants agree with me. This is in their limited court brief to the court at 10 CR 8463, that whether the judgment debtor established that one of the non-recognition provisions applies is a question of law review de novo. The parties agree this is a purely de novo review question on whether a statutory ground for non-recognition applies and whether defendants have met their burden to put in actual evidence. This is why simply saying that we weren't permitted to put in the expert report, for example, is not sufficient. Because even in the declaration, they don't say they weren't permitted to do it for an improper reason.
There was no fact before Judge Johnson that would have supported the exercise of his discretion with respect to his resolution of the permissive ground. No fact.
Well, Your Honor, there wasn't. On 2 CR 2070, paragraph 11, that is the defendant's declaration. They say that they were, quote, allowed to challenge the procedural deficiencies of expert proceedings on appeal. They admit they weren't allowed to do that. And to the extent there was a record slip up here, it was the defendants who recited paragraph 47 of the defendant's of the legal expert declaration. And that's the paragraph that said you couldn't appeal at the expert findings of fact in the Dubai proceedings. That's not in the record.
And I'll say again, we're operating under some difficulty here because of this huge record, and we don't know what survived. But nobody's told us.
No, no, we're happy to submit a redacted copy of the record if that's going to be helpful, but we did submit the ruling so the court could go paragraph by paragraph.
I understand that. That's a tremendous amount of work with the court, isn't it?
We're happy to submit a supplementary finding if that would assist them, a supplementary finding.
And, you know, actually, if, just gonna stream of consciousness here, but I think that if both sides could get together and come up with an agreed redacted record or a chart or just something that, so that we will know exactly what findings we are able to consider versus the ones that the objections that Judge Johnson sustained, that would be tremendously helpful. The objections to the evidence. So what evidence we've got to consider.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
No objection here. I'm happy to work. No argument.
Just the
evidence with the blackout of what was sustained by Judge Johnson.
Yes, and what do you think, 10 days? Is that a reasonable amount of time to get that?
Yes, for us as well.
Perfect. Thank you. That would help.
And I see that my time is up, so thank you. We ask the court to reverse.
Thank you very much. So your case is submitted. The oral argument has been extremely helpful. We appreciate counsel's time and look forward to getting a streamlined version of what we actually have to look at here. So with that, court is adjourned.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas now stands adjourned.